gentleman that does a tremendous job at WDSU each and every day and night, on top of everything on social media as well. My friend Fletcher Mackel. Fletcher, it's great to have you with us. How are you?
Hey, Ken, thanks for having me. As always, I appreciate you you letting me join you for a few minutes here. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you got it. You heard my monologue to get things started. Those two topics, first of all. I mean, am I off point there? Number one, why would anybody criticize the release of a schedule?
Yeah, no. Look, I'll say this. I said it last night on the news, and I'm doing a piece on it again tonight for the 10 o'clock news. The NFL is 2-for-2 right now. That the blowback from when they started the league year, it was pretty significant. There were people that said they're tone deaf with everything going on. They shouldn't start free agency. They shouldn't start their league year. They did, and it was a success. Same thing with the draft. Changed the draft, pushed the draft back. You know, general managers asked for it to be pushed back. Talent evaluators, they didn't do it, and it was the highest rated draft in television history. Now, again, because people are at home, but nonetheless, these were welcome respites from a rough period in everybody's life right now. So I think they're 2-for-2. I don't know if we're going to be playing games. I hope we are in September. I hope there are fans. But I have no problem with the NFL going forward with the release of their schedule. And I, like you, am blown away at people that take issue with that, especially in their recent run of success, you know, with the draft and free agency.
I just find that we live in a society today that is so polarized. You're either one way or the other. You're either virtually ignoring what's going on with the pandemic, or you're so paranoid about it that even the mention of the possibility of playing a football game in September is a God forbid thought process. I mean, I don't think either side's right, frankly. I just get amazed at the way people react to things because, again, it's nothing but a schedule release. It doesn't mean they're automatically going to play on these dates if it's not safe to do so. Hello. Then the Dream Team situation, I'm sure you've paid attention to and watched part of, if not all, of The Last Dance, correct?
Without question. I've loved every minute of it. I've watched every single first six episodes, not missed a second.
Yeah, same here. I've enjoyed it. It has filled gaps. The ratings are out of this world. That's because of the fact that there's little else going on. And there's a million things that you could pick on and talk about that have taken place. I've been amazed at some of it because I didn't recall all of it, obviously, as time went on. And we didn't have an NBA team at the time, so we weren't paying as close of attention. For instance, I didn't realize Dennis Rodman just took a vacation in the middle of a season, right? or that Michael Jordan decided to wear his original Air Jordans going back to Madison Square Garden and just did his feet a tremendous disservice in the process. But then there was the whole Dream Team situation about Isaiah Thomas and how that goes on. And my take on that is simple, and that is that nobody liked the Pistons and nobody liked him, and those guys as a whole probably were in favor of not playing with him. Look, Magic Johnson was one of his closest friends, and he didn't want him on the team. So I think there was a collective effort, not just to be pinned on Jordan, although he certainly had to have some influence over that process. I mean, consider this. Chuck Daly was the coach, Fletcher.
You're right. And look, I've obviously I have watched every minute of it, and then I watch and listen and read just like you do. And I, you know, I saw Michael Wilbon on today, who, you know, obviously he worked in Chicago, from Chicago, worked in D.C. for a long time, has covered the NBA. And they said that Jordan got the brunt of that because he was the biggest star in the NBA in 1992. Be like Mike, Gatorade, Nike was a huge deal, and everybody knew about, you know, Isaiah not shaking his hand. But there were a lot of other players. Bird had a history with him that wasn't great. Magic had a history with him that wasn't great. The way he played, the way Detroit played, I think that, yes, it kind of and this is also before social media, where everybody knew everything right away and there was so much more information, that I think that people just assumed, well, that was Michael didn't want him on the team because he didn't shake his hand after the Eastern Conference Finals in 91 or whatever it was. But I do think there was a lot of collective effort to keep Isaiah Thomas off of that team. I didn't realize how disliked he was as a player because of – I knew the way that – I was younger, obviously, but I remember the Pistons and the Bad Boy Pistons and as a kid growing up and then reading about them and watching the history of it growing up. But I didn't – I knew they were disliked. I knew how they played. I just didn't realize how disliked he was is an agitator and someone that, you know, competitors truly disdain.
Well, it's amazing when you watch the video, and I watched the NBA a lot in those days. Those were the so-called glory days with the superstars one after the other. If the Pistons did what they did then now, they'd have players ejected every night. I mean, it was a different game. They just mauled people consistently, and the bad boys really were Laimbeer and Mahorn. Isaiah was the smiling guy, but he did the dirty work, and he said some incendiary things in the process. The walking off stuff is one thing, but, you know, the way they treated Jordan, the comments about him, his comments about Bird and about the fact that because of his race he gets the attention, that he would just be a regular guy otherwise, which, of course, was not accurate at all. So I think there was a lot of bad blood that existed there. You heard my comments about Laettner, and I love Shaquille O'Neal, and he was a much better NBA player than Laettner, who, by the way, was a pretty good NBA player. Not a great one, but a pretty good one. But having said that, I had no problem whatsoever with the choice of Laettner. He deserved that, based upon the body of work for 4 years at Duke and the accomplishments that I alliterated a little bit earlier.
Yeah, without question. And again, that was right when I was, you know, at the end of my high school career. So I remember that 92 Dream Team. And I remember Laettner hitting the shot in what he did as a four-year player at Duke, at, you know, the premier college program of the time. And again, of course, sure, hindsight is always 20/20. Could you have picked Shaquille O'Neal and said, this guy's going to go on to be one of the greatest big men in the history of the NBA and do special things and win championships with different organizations? Yeah, but at the time, Christian Laettner was a four-year player at the premier program and was the college player of the year. So, you always say this a lot, and I always like it, of a time and of a place, of the time and of the place, Christian Laettner was the right pick at the right time in the right place. Sure, can we look back on it 28 years later and say, well, it should have been Shaq? Well, sure. But, you know, if we could go redraft every draft, I don't think 34 teams would have passed on Drew Brees if they'd have known he was going to go on to a 20-year NFL career and be one of the greatest ever. So of the time and of the place, I think Laettner was the right pick.
Staying on the NBA, and we're visiting with Fletcher McAlough, WDSU. I am of the opinion that they are going to have some sort or semblance of season in some way, in some shape, in some form here, and that if they have to extend, they will. I think it's probably going to be the model that's been talked about frequently, which is in a centralized location. It makes sense given the circumstances, but I think it's simply too important to the league, to Adam Silver, to let this season pass the way it is right now. Do you share that opinion?
I do to a certain extent. I think that the NBA, and I love Adam Silver, and I love covering the NBA and talking about the NBA, I do think they have been on the forefront. They're the ones who shut the sports down, basically, when Gobert tested positive. They said, we're shutting it down. That's it. And that was my biggest concern of when they start shutting leagues down, when do they come back? Football has time because it's a fall sport, and they could even go from September to October and November and slide the season back, and it would work. Baseball still has time. Hockey and basketball are different. I am 70-30 that they're coming back, but it wouldn't surprise me if Adam Silver said, it's not going to work out. We can't get the testing. We can't logistically pull it off, and this season is gone. So I am not of the opinion, I'm not a 90-10 guy that they're coming back. I would say I'm more 70-30 right now that they're coming back, but I still think there's a very real 30% that this season may not come back. And let me add on by saying this. When they come back, they're not bringing all 30 teams to a bubble city. They're bringing the playoff teams that, unfortunately, for the fringe playoff teams like the Pelicans and San Antonio, I think their seasons are over. For the bottom feeder teams like Golden State and Cleveland, they're happy it's over. But I just don't see them, when they resume, how they're going to bring all 30 to finish. I think just squeezing and shoehorning the playoffs in before Labor Day is going to be a monumental task. So I don't see how some of these fringe teams or non-playoff teams are going to get a shot at getting in.
It's a logistics nightmare. I concur with that sentiment. When we think of sporting events moving forward, whenever fans will be part of the process, and who knows when that's going to be, I don't think any of us can accurately say when that will take place. Do you suspect we're going to have a new normal? I do. All I can do is think back to what transpired after 9/11 and the implementation of scanning devices at stadiums and arenas and wanding that takes place. Are we now going to see thermal decoders to check people's temperatures? Are we going to see some questioning that takes place? Are people going to be required to wear some sort of protection? Do you think we're going to see a new normal here where sporting events are concerned?
In the foreseeable future, without question, I think social distancing will be a huge deal, be it concession stands or bathroom lines, even lines to get in when lines form to give your tickets. I don't know how much they'll be able to do. How do you check the temperature of every single person that is going to walk through a stadium if you're going to have 75,000 people in there? You know, that's going to be a process that would take hours on end. But I do think for the foreseeable future, when fans come back, you're going to see measures. I think you'll see a lot of people wearing masks, games. Even after this pandemic ends and they say it's safe to go back, I think you'll still see people, especially of a certain age or of a certain degree of health, wearing the masks at sporting events. And I certainly think you'll have a lot of social distancing policies in place. And again, I don't know when fans are coming back. I hope in the fall. And I hope it's safe enough and we can do that. But yeah, I do think there'll be some, just like after 9/11, I do think there'll be some new protocols that will be implemented that will be with us for the long-term future going forward.
Of course, we've all talked about the NFL draft and the Saints and what they've done ad nauseum, and we've got Deuce Windham coming on. We'll talk more with him about that in just a bit. But from the standpoint of where the New Orleans Saints are right now, I certainly believe, as many do, that the Saints have a tremendous advantage with the lack of training camps and the lack of overall preparation with the fluid squad that they have, with the quarterback they have, with the coach that they have, with the little change that will take place on their roster. Because let's face it, going into the draft, there were probably no more than 10 roster spots available, if fewer than that. And as a result, this is a very fluid team, a consistent team with a consistent coach and approach that probably will fare well as a result of the lack of an offseason.
Yeah, I think that they are one of the teams that is going to be best positioned to handle this. That we've all talked about it, and we can keep talking about it because it's just a truth, is that we know how deep their roster is. We learned how deep it was in 2017. We saw how deep it was in 2018 and certainly in 2019, even with a guy like Teddy Bridgewater stepping up, how good the backup quarterback was. So I think you're 100% right. The consistency on their coaching staff, that they've been able to keep their coordinators and Dan Campbell's still here, Dennis Allen's still here, Chris Johnson's still here, Pete Carmichael, Joe. I mean, the top coaches, Ryan Nielsen on the defensive line. I mean, did they lose their linebackers coach? Yes, but for all practical purposes, their roster is intact, their coaching staff is intact, how they do things, how they operate, what they do, I think is a benefit. The one thing I'll point out is this. Because a lot of people have been equating this to the lockout of 2011. The Saints had a veteran team then, and a lot of the principles were in place. Same with the Green Bay Packers. And I remember those teams, you know, I think Rodgers even made fun of a team like the Saints when Drew Brees was organizing workouts on his own. But I look at a team like the San Francisco 49ers that year, and when the lockout ended, I remember the first preseason game was New Orleans-San Francisco, and New Orleans embarrassed the Niners. It was a new coach. It was a new system. They just looked like, you know, it was Christians versus Lions, so to say. But by the end of the year, the San Francisco 49ers had figured it out enough to get to the NFC Championship game in 2011, beating the Saints in the playoffs. So I think that immediately the teams that have veteran players, veteran coaches, veteran staff, policies and procedures in place will benefit. But if they start the season and have training camp, I do think these are the best players in the world at their sport and the best coaches, and they will be able to catch up and even the playing field. But the ones like the Saints and some of the other teams that haven't had a lot of change, I do think are in a better position to weather this storm in the offseason and early into the 2020 regular season.
If there's any position that would concern you the most right now where the Saints are concerned, what might that position be on the team?
Maybe cornerback, because we know that Marshon Lattimore has made the Pro Bowl in 2 out of 3 years. And when he's checked in and engaged, he can lock anybody down. I think that we saw Janoris Jenkins at the end of last season find his groove with this team, and he's penciled in as a starter. But after those two on the outside, you know, to me, I still think they have a few questions. Sure, they re-signed, you know, P.J. Williams, and he's been a solid backup, and they still have P-Rob, and he can play in a variety of roles. But I would say that, hypothetically, if something happened where you lost Lattimore or Jenkins fell off a cliff from a talent perspective now that he's in his 30s, I do think that could be an area that you can make an argument where they are a little bit thin.
Do you feel this is Drew Brees' last season, or do you have any feel for that whatsoever?
My feel is this is it, that they won't say that this is his farewell tour because of the distraction that comes with it. And I don't think they'd want to put that pressure on him. They don't want to put it on their team. But there's no doubt in my mind that I think, look, we all know what Drew Brees has meant to this organization, to this city, from a football perspective, from a humanitarian perspective. Yeah, I mean, he's the greatest athlete in our city's history, bar none. And as a human being, he and his wife are fantastic people. But I do think he took, I mean, we've heard hints and rumors about this, and all of us, you know, New Orleans is a small city. He has friends, and we talk to people. I do think that he spent a month and that this wasn't fake, that he really contemplated long and hard about, is this it? So I think that this is it. I look, if he comes back, I would love for the Saints to keep taking him back as long as he keeps wanting to play. And if he wants to play in 2021, they'll make the money work and they'll do what they have to do. But in my heart of hearts, I think that this is Drew Brees' farewell tour, even though they will never admit that and he will not say that.
Right. I agree with you. And I'm not so sure that Peyton's verbiage was a slip of the tongue when he said what he said, even though he came back and said he misstated it. I kind of think that maybe he was on to something, or maybe meant to say something there. That said, I think this is it for many reasons. One, he nearly quit this offseason. Two, if they slip at all, he doesn't want to be part of anything where they're really becoming a lesser entity. And three, if they win it all, what a way to go out. And then last but not least, how many more heartbreaks can you take at the end of a season? I mean, the way these last three seasons have ended, I don't know that you could script this any worse. It's been unbelievable, and he's obviously been part of all three of those.
Yeah, no, you're right, and I think that that's driven him. Like, you know, I wouldn't have been surprised in one iota. I wouldn't have been surprised if the Saints had not had that game against the Rams in the NFC Championship game taken away from them. If they had gone to the Super Bowl, even if they wouldn't have won the Super Bowl, if he'd have climbed back to the top of the mountain and gotten the Saints to the Super Bowl, I think he may have retired and wouldn't have played the 2019 season. But there was no way he was going out on the Nolan no call. I don't think retirement after the 2017 season, that was pretty quick, if you remember. He was a free agent after the Minnesota Miracle, and he pretty quickly said, I'm a Saint for life, didn't talk about retirement. Then in 2018, I think that was probably more real, but he came back. And then this year, I think if they'd have made it to the NFC Championship game or the Super Bowl, he may have said that's enough for me. But I think that, you know, taking a month to decide, all of the factors that you outlined, plus I do think there are family considerations. I mean, I know it's something that we don't talk about because it's his personal life, and I respect him and however he wants to raise his family, but they do split their time now between New Orleans and California. And I do think that his kids are maybe getting to the age where that's a difficult proposition, and he may spend too much time away from them in the off season. So again, I think all of the factors you outlined and I addressed, plus that caveat, I certainly think that this is, and again, if he wants to play forever, I would love Drew Brees to play till he's 40, 45, 47, 50 years old if he could do it. But I just think in my heart of hearts, and I'll be pleasantly surprised if he plays in 2021, and would hope that that's, you know, a great thing he considers. But I just think, again, after taking a full month to make this decision, that this is it for Drew Brees. So let's hope that after three heartbreaks, they finally find a way to break through this year.
Last question, is it Taysom Hill or is it Jameis Winston when he departs?
It's Taysom Hill. I've been on Team Taysom for a long time. I think they have spent the last 3 years. You know, Sean Payton didn't think Taysom Hill's our guy right away. It was probably midway through 2018 when he said it, and then he said it this year. He's told everybody, you know, and it's not just for TV and it's not just talk. I think Taysom provides all the intangibles they want. And I don't know if Taysom Hill's going to be a great quarterback, but I think they are confident that they're going to give him the chance to be a great quarterback. And we'll see. Nothing against Jameis Winston, but I think that they've made a commitment. They like Taysom Hill, and we'll find out in 2021 if Taysom Hill is a good quality starting quarterback in the NFL. But there's no doubt in my mind that Taysom Hill is going to be handed the keys to the car when Brees retires, and they're going to give him a shot to be the guy.